Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And I am joined by Jessica Pishko. She's a journalist, a lawyer, and she is the author of the brand new book, The Highest Law in the Land, How the Unchecked Power of Sheriffs Threatens Democracy. The book is available everywhere. And Jessica, as I start this out, I'd never heard of the Constitutional Sheriffs Movement until a couple of years ago when the sheriff of our little town had a speaker, a constitutional lawyer by the name of Chris Ann Hall, here in Sioux City, and gave a training session to deputies and essentially a training session to the public. And so for those who may not have gone to that talk or have not read your book yet, can you explain the Constitutional Sheriffs Movement in the grand scheme of things?
Absolutely. The Constitutional Sheriff Movement, which, by the way, is named not because sheriffs are in the Constitution, but rather because they believe, a lot like the Oath Keepers, that the sheriffs are the primary protectors of the U.S. Constitution, right? So it's about protecting constitutional values, according to them. They're a group of currently serving sheriffs, and they believe, in essence, that the sheriff is the highest law in the land, as I call my book. In other words, the sheriff decides what laws are constitutional and how they should be enforced. Some sheriffs say that the sheriff is above all other law enforcement officials like the FBI or state troopers, and even that the sheriff has more lawmaking authority than the president or the Supreme Court or the governor. And one of the sheriffs says, in short, no one can tell the sheriff what to do.
Is there any support in law, in the Constitution, or in jurisprudence for that assertion?
No, absolutely not. So this is a movement that is born of the far right. As I said, it tracks along with other far right movements like militia movements and groups like the Oath Keepers, in which a group of people have decided that they want to support the Constitution and interpret it in a particular way. So there's no support. The U.S. Constitution doesn't mention sheriffs whatsoever. Sheriffs are often in many state constitutions, but that's alongside all other types of elected officials. So there's really no legal support for this movement. It's rather more about kind of the idea, really the idea of liberty being something that is, in essence, protected by, like, groups of armed white men and not something that's anything to do with, like, law or history.
What I thought was interesting in your book is you took us through, the readers, through the history of sheriffs in this nation, and I thought it was interesting that you pointed out that the history of sheriffs has primarily been written by sheriffs, and that's really where it is, where it starts and stops. And so you do get a slanted view of history, but can you explain how the history of sheriffs as we know it versus what you found has differed?
Yes, so it's really interesting that sheriffs have been able to write their own history, like a lot of law enforcement officers, and a lot of them write about sheriffs kind of like kings, right? Like, this sheriff did this, and this sheriff did that, so it's like a kind of hagiography of various sheriffs. I mean, it turns out that the office of sheriff is, as always, a lot more complicated than one might think. The office did originally come from England. It came to the United States. And during the 1800s, in a period that a lot of historians call Jacksonian democracy, the office became elected. And this was a time in which democracy spread, but it was really limited to white men. So the idea was that all white men would be able to vote for their local sheriff. And the office kind of has a lot of vestiges of that today. The office is almost all held by white men, so the over 3,000 sheriffs of the country remain, right, extremely masculine, extremely white. Change has come very slow to this office, so it has typically trended much more conservative and much more right-leaning than a lot of other offices. And the office remains really local, so a lot of sheriffs who are elected went to high school in the county in which they're elected. So it remains a very local kind of conservative movement, and I think that that's led to the reason why this constitutional sheriff movement has taken root, right? Because you have this office whose history is really based in a lot of racial repression, a lot of white supremacy, protecting Anglo settlers, and helping them, right, enforce land rights against Native Americans. And so it has sort of led to this office with a lot of independence, but also like a lot of roots and kind of the white supremacy sort of America.
So I'm a nut about presidential history, and so I found the nugget because I've heard the quote so many times, and I've seen it in sheriff campaign literature from Thomas Jefferson, and it's a lot of sheriff candidates point to it. And can you explain how the quote from Thomas Jefferson about the importance of a sheriff has been completely misconstrued and taken out of context to just boil down to a one sentence that really is meaningless in the grand scheme of things when talking about the sheriff's office?
That's correct. So there's a quote from Thomas Jefferson, sheriff sort of used it. It's the quote that's like, the sheriff is the most important elected officer in the county. I have to tell you that when I realized that was really out of context, I initially thought I was quite wrong, and so reread it multiple times because I didn't think that highly of my historical research abilities to think that like I had really, that this was something that no one had pointed out. And that, it's a letter from Thomas Jefferson to someone else, and in that letter, he's pointing out, in essence, that Jefferson didn't like to pay taxes. And so, at that time, one of the major roles of the county sheriff was to collect taxes. Historically, before the sheriff was elected, the sheriff collected taxes on behalf of the king, and West was still colonies of England, and that was the role of the sheriff. And then when the U.S. became its own independent country, the sheriff remained as an office. But again, their major role was actually to collect taxes, occasionally to collect ballots. So it was a very civil role, not really a policing role. And so in this letter, Thomas Jefferson is mostly complaining about how he doesn't like paying taxes, that he would like to control the way taxes are collected, which makes a lot of sense, like Thomas Jefferson's belief about like state sovereignty and role of taxes in the country, but it has actually nothing to do with policing and very little to do with the role of the actual sheriff. He cites the sheriff in a list of like other local offices. So I was pretty surprised by that. And as I also talk about the book, like really the sheriff did not become a particularly important office of democracy until Andrew Jackson was president. And that was really when there was this push for like local elected officials and this idea that electing the sheriff would be something that was meaningful to a lot of people.
I'm chatting with Jessica Pishko about her new book, The Highest Law in the Land, How the Unchecked Power of Sheriffs Threatens Democracy. The book's available everywhere. Jessica, this term about threat to democracy gets thrown around by politicians quite a bit now, and seems more so in the last 10 or so years. But when we look at the constitutional sheriffs movement, Tip O'Neill used to say all politics is local. I'm sure he didn't come up with it, but that's the one who it's often attributed to. But when you think about threatening democracy at the local level, can you explain how that plays out, this threat to democracy from the constitutional sheriff's movement?
So I mean it really in two different ways. In the initial way, I think that there's a real threat among all sheriffs because they are so grossly unrepresented of the people. And that we like to think that local democracy is a good thing, but it turns out in the case of sheriffs that it leads to like a kind of a populist gross misrepresentation of what the people want. In the second instance, constitutional sheriffs themselves, because of their intent to take the law into their own hands, as well as their role in terms of the MAGA movement and the desire to popularize, you know, lies about who won the 2020 election, myths about non-citizen voting, and their desire to police elections in a way that's really inappropriate. And that way, I think they really serve as, like, a actual physical threat to democracy. At the time I pitched the book, it had the subtitle. It actually wasn't as clear to me. It would be quite as literal as it is today. But BC constitutional sheriffs and their followers, you know, asserting a lot of lies about elections and claiming that they are the only ones who can protect elections, which is, you know, simply not true.
Something else that we've seen a rise of in our area of the country is the sovereign citizen movement, and you discuss this in your book as it's really runs parallel to the constitutional sheriff's movement, because the sovereign citizens, they always respect the sheriffs and the deputies and everybody, but they don't respect any other entity. And so was one essentially bred out of the other?
Yes, that's right. So really, both of them came from kind of the same far-right soup, a kind of far-right movements that started in the 70s and 80s, largely in actually the rural Midwest. A lot of it was linked to the farm crisis of the 80s, which was that a lot of farmers were losing their land because they were unable to afford their property. And it stemmed all a large number of far-right movements, again, from understandable economic circumstances in which people were losing their land. But among them came groups like the militia movement, right, which puts primacy on the ownership of firearms, as well as the sovereign citizen movement, which tends to sort of rely upon like an alternate slate of laws. They sort of believe in what they call citizen grand juries, which is the idea that citizens can get together and indict federal officials. And all of these movements believe that the sheriff is the local official most likely to be sympathetic to their movement. So it's kind of this like mix of things that the constitutional sheriff movement sort of dabbles in.
Well, we've only begun to unpack all of the history and the politics and the constitutional issues in this book. The book is The Highest Law in the Land, How the Unchecked Power of Sheriffs Threatens Democracy. It's written by Jessica Pishko. It's an incredibly readable and entertaining book. Jessica, I found it incredibly interesting, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Thanks so much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.